Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Happy Throwback Thursday.
It's that time of the week again.
Oh my gosh, Kevin, you just literally jumped off the charts there sound-wise.
I know. Well, sometimes we haven't done these in a while, so I get a little excited.
I know you do.
Are you just doing sound check right now still? Or did we start for real?
Well, it could be whatever you want at this point.
No, I feel
it
like
it could be whatever you want
at this
point.
We have to keep it in for the comedic value.
Well, let's talk about comic timing. Kevin got very angry because before we went on the air, I gave Kevin a note.
I may have gotten a little defensive.
And Kevin doesn't take notes
and I'm sorry.
All that well.
No, I do. As an actor, I do. Rob said that sometimes in the last couple episodes of My Favorite Things, I cut in and out sometimes. And I should know this, but I actually don't listen to My Favorite Things. So I was like, what are you talking about? And Rob was like, well, maybe if you didn't play with the cord while you're talking. And I was like, I don't play with the cord, Rob.
Kevin, it's not a bad thing, but Kevin is sort of like Judy Garland, because like he'll sit on my sofa cross-legged, and we've got this really long mic cable, and he sits there, and when I'm droning on and on about like
or doing some impersonation,
yeah, when I'm doing like some impersonation, Kevin looks at the cord and goes, "Can I make this a noose for myself?"
No.
So he pulls the cord a lot.
I'm still not convinced. I'm not even touching the microphone now.
Well, you, Kevin, it's not a criticism. You just have a tendency to fidget sometimes.
I'm a fidgeter. My mom used to say to me, "Kevin, sit on your hands."
But like, I didn't want to say anything, but the last interview we did, you take the mic stand and
I play with it.
Yeah, but when you tap it like this,
I know you actually
the mic shakes.
During an interview, Rob actually like tapped my hands and was like, "Stop it, Kevin."
I didn't say stop it. I was
you
just
did with your eyes, Rob. You did with your eyes.
I was just saying to you like there's going to be a tapping sound for our listeners.
Oh no, I'm sorry.
That's all. I have horrible tendencies too.
Like what?
And I want it. Well, you know, nothing really. But I'm pretty perfect. But I'm trying to, you know, make you feel good. No, because
Rob.
I'm just saying, Kevin. I'm just. I'm not criticizing your content. I'm just saying, hey, listen. Every once in a while, there's a tendency.
We're not going to cut it in and out today. Today, it's going to be full voice all the time.
Luckily, I cut out. Luckily, what happens is when you get excited about something, you stop fidgeting. So then that way the sound is okay. I'm just saying, it's not a note. I'm not talking about your content.
Oh, Rob.
I think you're wonderful at what you do.
I thank you.
Hey, speaking of wonderful,
we
got to see Grand Hotel this weekend.
And it's my favorite thing.
What? Is it really?
It really is.
Oh, my God.
I know it's a little on the nose, but I just figured it was such a revelation to me that... And it's not like everyone in the city saw it, so I thought, this is going to be my favorite thing. So we can start off saying it's my favorite thing, and we saw it. Oh. Rob and I got to see it together, which was really fun going to the theater together, I have to
say.
Yes,
it was a nice day.
It was a really fun day. We went to the Sunday matinee.
But before the Sunday matinee, we had brunch.
Yes.
We went to Bar Bacon.
We did, one of our favorite places, or at least it's Rob's favorite place. I've never been before.
And what did you think?
I had a great time. I have to say that when my cocktail came and the bacon was actually in the Manhattan, at that point I thought, okay, I've had enough bacon. I'm good. I don't know.
I've had enough bacon. Like you can have enough oxygen.
I actually did not finish it. I was
what?
I know.
You didn't.
But I had the bacon in the sandwich. The bacon. We had the bacon. the poo poo patter of bacon. The tasting menu bacon.
We got a bacon sampler. It was four different types of bacon.
You had quite a day of theater that day, because not only did Rob and I see Grand Hotel, but in the evening, Rob and Robbie Roselle, our friend of the podcast, went to see one of our former guests.
Me and Mr. B starring Anita Gillette.
Yes, at the old Birdland.
Which, you know what? I had never been to Birdland before.
I still have yet to go to Birdland.
It's a cool space.
Yeah?
It's a really cool space.
I've always wanted to go.
It feels very much like a 1940s supper club.
Right.
I'm assuming. I mean, what, I wasn't there.
Back when there used to be them like all the time.
Yes.
Like that was a normal event to go out to the supper club.
You know, the store club and
right.
El Morocco and
Reno's.
Reno Sweeney's. Oh, I think that was a little like janky.
That's like more of like a, yeah.
That's like a bar, like a closet with a bar.
Oh, right.
And a stage, a little platform for, you know.
So it's like the duplex.
Grover Dale to get up there and do his
gotcha.
Thing.
Gotcha. And do like a pot de bourrée kick.
Do a pot de bourrée kick nice. And tip your waiter. Pass the hat.
And which is, didn't need to do any of that as well?
Pass the hat?
No. Well, oh, maybe. But do a little pot de bourrée kick ball change. Did she?
No, she didn't really do a lot of dancing. She pretended to fall asleep during a number. But that was pretty much the quote. No, I'm being serious. There's no joke.
You were like the
no,
joke.
She sang. I forgot the name of it. I have to ask her what it was. It was this great Irving Berlin song about sleeping on the banks of a river.
Okay.
Like going out fishing on the banks of a river. And it was really charming. I had never
cute.
Heard it before.
Cute.
Yeah, she did some more obscure Irving Berlin, which was great. And she told great stories about Mr. President. And she was fantastic. I mean, she's 80. Is that right? She turned 80, I think, this past year.
Wow.
And I'm like, God, I can't even do that at my age.
She was fun. We had a really good time interviewing her friends. So we went to her apartment and she acted everything out for us. It was great. If you want to go back and listen, I forget what number it is, but it's scroll down and find the Anita Gillette interview because it was a really fun time. She was a real great storyteller. I'm sorry I missed her performance.
But you had a rehearsal. Oh, Kevin dropped my bottle cap.
I did.
Oh, sorry. Are you okay?
I'm good. But we saw Grand Hotel together, and that was really fun.
It was amazing.
It was beautiful.
I'm gonna go on record. I think this was the best encores I've ever seen.
Really?
It was done at Encores this past weekend. I thought it was absolutely fantastic.
We were captivated. We had beautiful seats right in the orchestra. It was really fun. We saw Fravor.
We saw, fun. Oh my God, yeah, we got to see. It's actually, this is.
Speaking of past interviews, yeah.
I think we had a couple of pinch me moments that day.
I looked at Rob and I was like, Rob, we like know people. I got so excited the fact that we actually knew people.
I think it's kind of cool that, you know, a few years ago, you know, you'd sit in a theater and you would point and you go, oh my God, I know that person. Like, not just know them from face recognition, not know them personally, but know their work. And now we point to those people and go, we know them. And they come over and say hello to us.
Right.
It was a little...
No, I'm sorry, but when Mark Sandroff came over to you and started talking about Steve Lawrence and how he had dinner with him last night, and it was, I was like, this is really the conversation you guys are going to have. You're going to do... That's just amazing.
Business, man. Business.
Yeah, I love it.
Oh, and the wonderful graphic designer...
Yes.
Frank Verlizzo, but better known as Fravor.
Yeah.
Who was one of our first interviews that we had. He is amazing.
We had such a good time. And that was a very popular interview because he was a little outside of the realm of where we usually go, but it was, he talked about great stuff.
And if you haven't listened to the episode, he's the guy who designed the poster for The Lion King and the poster for Death Trap.
Sweeney Todd.
And Sweeney Todd.
The original.
Todd, the original. He's consistently working. Anyway, very exciting news though. In May, he's publishing a book of his posters with commentary on how he came to each design.
What a great... I can't believe he hasn't ever put anything out.
No, I mean, that work, though, is incredible. Yeah. So I'm sure we'll talk to him again.
That'll be a favorite thing at some point.
At some point. Yeah, so anyway, Grand Hotel, Kevin and I got to see Grand Hotel. Like I was saying before, I'm going to go on record. I think it was the best encore I've ever seen. It was, I think, brilliantly directed and choreographed by Josh Rhodes, who, if you don't know his name now, just wait a couple
we're
of years.
We're going to see a lot more of him. I remember seeing Bright Star, and of course I love Bright. It has a very special place in my
his
heart.
His work on Bright Star was fabulous.
The movement in that, I don't really call it choreography, yes. It's musical staging. It's this thing where it's like, you can't just, it's not just like, all right, do a pas de bourrée, step kick, you know, it's more than that. It's people moving, but in a great in that platform set that moved around, and it was so seamless and beautiful, and you could see that exact same work in a different way, but for this Grand Hotel. And yet, you know, Tommy Toon is so inextricably, you know, woven into that framework. I mean, it's Tommy Toon, the way it's song, scene, dialogue, and the music doesn't ever stop it. And yet Josh took that and like elevated it even to another level, I feel like. Now, I had not seen the original, so I can't say, but I thought it was contemporary and beautiful.
I think it did what Encores is supposed to do, which is remind you of these great pieces that are forgotten by time, that have merit to them, and I think this one proved it's got a lot of merit. Don't be surprised if we find out that it's going to move to Studio 54 at some point.
Right?
Because it feels like that's the perfect space for
it. And it ran for like two and a half years. It was
when it first came out, yeah.
Yeah, and it was like one of the first shows since Big River to run like 1,000 performances. Because, you know, it was a dying time, some say, in the 80s for our business. And for so this old throwback, and there's a feeling of it being a throwback in style and sound, and yet... It is, to me, a contemporary feeling musical. I mean, that's why it's a favorite thing. I want to talk about the history of it because I was completely blown away, and I've known it's been on my list of shows to listen to. And then when we got the tickets, I thought, all right, it's been 10 years, Kevin. I need to finally listen to this show that I've always wanted to like. I've known like a couple of the Maury Esten songs, but I didn't know the full score.
Did you listen before we went?
Oh yeah,
you did a re-listen. Okay.
Oh yeah. I really wanted to get myself familiar with the score, and I knew like the Love Can't Happen, of course, because I love David Carroll. It's so epic. It's such great singing. But there was this is a show that had a very dramatic history.
Oh, yes.
The reason why it has this contemporary and traditional feel is because it was written literally in the 50s originally.
Ooh, tell us the story.
All right, Kev. So here's the story. I first heard about this show because my mentor, as we've talked about on this podcast, is Jack Lee, the great music director who passed away a couple years ago. I learned so much about the business from him when I moved to New York City. And he used to tell me stories of being with Grand Hotel in Boston.
In the 50s?
No, this is in the 80s. But he would tell me that that's when they came back to this original version and tried to make it work again. I'm going to rewind now from there and go back. So picture it. 50s.
Sicily.
Yeah, exactly. 1957, 58. You've got this writing team and directing team and leading lady of Edwin Lester, who, you know, obviously was the great impresario of the West Coast who brought us Kismet and Timbuktu and stuff like that, and he's sort of bridging the gap between operetta and American musical theater. And so for every Kismet, there is a Zenda, so not every show was a big hit. Yes, I just brought
in Zenda.
For every
Kismet, there is a Zenda.
That's right. That's the quote of this day. But it's true. You know, and we talked about Zenda, and we've talked about the Alfred Drake, Cheetah Rivera hit show Zenda, but Kismet was a hit show, and directed by and I hate pronouncing names wrong, and please forgive me, but Albert Marr.
I think it's Marr, but I could be. Totally
and then his
wrong.
Wife is Joan Diener or Diner.
I think it's D I E N E R. No, D I E N R.
D E I.
Oh, I got it wrong.
N E R. Diner. Diener.
Diener.
You listeners, forgive me, because it's my pet peeve when people pronounce things wrong, and I'm probably doing it right now, forgive me.
Marion Seldes, I called her Marianne Seldes on our last podcast.
Well, I used to call Robert Morris, and it's Robert Morse, so there we go.
What'd you call him, Robert
Remember
Morris?
Remember when we first started, I was like, Robert Morris, and someone on the line was like, Kevin, it's Morris, not Morris.
Oh, you like M-O-R-R-I-S.
I misspoke it early on. But
oh,
now, so now I'm like, is it Diener? I don't know. But I love her. She's a great voice, and she was Aldonza. So you have...
Just call her Aldonza.
Okay. So
Kiss Me Kate was a... Oh, sorry. Kismet. You know why it was a critical hit? Do you know this story?
No, tell me.
There was a newspaper strike when it opened, and they said had the critics actually reviewed it, they would have been like, this is a piece of crap.
But the audience didn't have the... Because a lot of times the audience would love it, the reviews would come out saying it was awful, and then the audience the next day would all of a sudden hate it.
And it had a lot of... what's it called? A lot of word of mouth from television and radio appearances.
Oh, okay.
But there was no there was no press to say that Kismet was bad.
Well,
not one of my favorites.
So it was. I actually do like the score, but I've never seen the movie. But Kismet was a hit at the time. So this same team, as was their wont, was like, all right, let's do another thing. So they wrote a show, which was loosely based on the 1929 novel by Vicki Baub, which is about this hotel, this grand hotel. In Berlin, 1920s, 1928 to be exact, and it's just about a day in the life of the fanciest hotel in this town, where there is much sort of not richness all around, but the hotel is the place where all the top 1% go to hang out.
People go.
Oh, there we go. Thanks, Rob. You'd be great as the doctor that opens and closes.
He doesn't have
it.
To sing, really.
Not really. It'd be nice. He could be. He could give like a rubber goulet kind of. All right. Anyway, so
Kevin literally saw me getting into a character for Robert Goulet, and he literally jumped onto his next statement. How dare you?
The musical was called in 1958. By the way, it was by the same songwriting team. Although Forrest and Wright for Kismet, they adapted the themes of Borodin and classical composers, and then they will adapt the themes and then make that into a musical. Well, they actually composed the songs for At the Grand, this retelling of the original book and movie, the MGM Grand movie that we know from 1932 with Greta Garbo, John Barrymore, Crawford. But the difference was, for this original in the 50s, they changed it. They decided Luther Davis, who was the book writer, they did not put it in Berlin. They made the lead ballerina a fading opera singer so that Joan Diener Diner could sing in it, could be the lead, because the Albert Mayer's wife needed to part, so they changed that. They cut, like, the bad guy, you know, the businessman, they cut that whole Christic thing. Yeah, there were, like two bumbling criminals, of course, because you have to have the comedic criminal number.
Of course, it's
you know,
a
they added,
comedy.
They just changed a lot of the original, so it almost didn't even recognize the original material that it was sourced on. And so it played out of town in San Francisco, the L.A. San Francisco circuit that Edward Lester had, and it didn't
Paul Muni?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it didn't do well. It they couldn't find what it was, and because it lost what it was. It mm-hmm. wasn't, and it didn't transfer to New York, and they thought it might, but it didn't. And then it faded away, and they moved on to other things. So three decades later, the writers come back together, and Forrest and Wright and Davis were going to say, let's see if we can get this off the ground again. This time, Tommy Toon is involved. The great, great, great Tommy Toon, who was just gotten done with a couple years earlier with Nine, and that was a big, big hit. So you've got Tommy Toon doing his Tommy Toon thing, and they decided to put the focus back on the original book, bring the characters back, make every no more opera singer, get back to the what it was about, a day in the life of this hotel, and how these seven random stories, much like you've seen movies where this happens, like Traffic, I want to say, or is it called Traffic? Yeah, where these seven random stories that are not connected at all, and then on one fateful day, they all connect. Everyone's lives are changed, and then they all go back out again. And for me, this show really is about humanity and what it's just life, really, in a little capsule of time. And I just love how they constructed this retelling three decades later. Tommy Toon has his Tommy Toon style of having dialogue, music, song, dance. It's all interwoven into a hour and, 50-minute
one-act
show, which I didn't know. I thought it was like this big three-hour-long musical. Nope, it's just like a day in the life of. They're out of town in Boston, Colonial Theater. This is where Jack Lee comes in, because Jack would tell me that they were in this big ballroom at the Ritz-Carlton.
That's their rehearsal.
They put the writers up at the Ritz-Carlton, so it was kind of like they were living in the Grand Hotel, and they were in the ballroom putting together this musical, and it wasn't working. And the original songs, some of them worked. They cut other songs, and Tommy Toon realized he needed another writer. And so he looked to his last writer, Maury Yeston. And as Maury Yeston says it, Maury Yeston had no idea what he was going. He thought he was just going up to Boston to take a look at things. Tommy Toon asks him to come up and take a look. Peter Stone, the famous book writer and playwright, but he did 1776 and so many other things. He comes up as well. Now, Tommy Toon gives him a nice suite in the Ritz-Carlton, and then says, "I want you to, here's a piano in the room, write me some songs. Here are some moments that aren't working." And so Maury Yeston pumps out in like 22 days or something like that, pumps out like seven or eight songs, which is incredible. And six of them, I think, make it into the show. It's like Love Can't Happen, At the Grand. I mean, some really great songs. And yet the songs, it sounds like one cohesive score.
Yeah.
They got rid of a couple of the Forrest and Wright songs, but they kept a lot of them. And some of them transitioned into each other. You have some of the themes. So, all in all, it worked. And this is an example of a show going out of town. It's going downhill, not looking so good. And then they actually turn it around. And they actually turn it around and make it into what, at the time, it was a hit. It came into New York, did very well. It did not win the Tony Award for Best Musical. That was won by
City of Angels.
However, this ran 3 months longer than City of Angels did, which is interesting. And it had a. I mean, obviously, we have to talk about my favorite, David Carroll.
So special. Yes.
And it's there was sadness in this story, and this one of the first stories that Jack ever told me was because even back then, you know, 2002 when I first came to New York, I was obsessed with David Carroll, and Jack was so kind to tell me these stories of the final moments of
who
David.
Was the lead. David
who
was
the lead. He was the Baron. Who was the in this. The plot roughly is, yes, in a day in the life of this really fancy hotel, but you get all kinds of people coming to this hotel for opportunity, for success, for not success. The Baron is a Baron who doesn't have any money. And like the doctor who sort of opens it, this, you know, old veteran who's giving himself morphine and just sits in the lobby all day long. He says, people go, nothing ever changes.
Which you can now see at the Hotel Carter on 43rd and 8th.
Or the Equity Lounge. sorry, that's not funny. So you have these characters like the Baron who has no money, so there's nothing worse than a penniless Baron. You have a faded prima ballerina who can't go on stage anymore. You have a businessman who's a sort of a bad guy, a Trumpian sort of businessman. You've got so all different kinds of characters that intertwine and mix. And David Carroll played the Baron. You don't have him on the cast recording because he died. We've talked about this before, but for those of you who haven't heard, that he was suffering from complications of AIDS, and they waited 2 years to record the cast recording because of just issues with the composers, and because you had two songwriting teams, no record label really wanted to pick it up because how are you going to pay for all of this? A lot of it involved money. And finally they did, and they actually had the recording session 2 weeks early for David because they knew that he wasn't doing so well. So they came in early 2 weeks with just the piano so they could lay his voice down, thinking if we get his voice down, then we can layer the orchestra in 2 weeks later when we call everybody else in. So he's in the recording studio. He says, Jack, and to everyone, I got to run to the bathroom real quick. And then he never came back. So they were like literally about to record him, and it didn't happen. And it's just like beyond sad. Fortunately, on the album, there is a bonus track of him singing at, ironically, an Equity Fights AIDS benefit 1991. Him singing, slaying this song. You can also see a clip of him doing it on YouTube on the Phil Donahue show. And we'll post that. So 2 weeks later, because Carroll had already left the show because it's been 2 years, Brent Barrett, who had played on tour and then took over, he came in. And so this recording, this cast album, when you listen to it, if you know on top of it all that the cast came together and sang, knowing 2 weeks earlier this other guy who they started with had left them, and so the cast album is almost an honor to him, and that's why I think it's now knowing that context, you can listen to it with all. It's that much more special to know that this is what happened to get there. I never knew what a brilliant piece of writing it ended up being. This great, and having watched it with you on Sunday, to see the staging, not just listening to it, but seeing how. I want to see a full production. I don't want it to just be like in concert. I want to see a full, little bit more. I want the orchestra on stage. I love that, and I like the elegance of it, but I want to see more of those transitions.
This felt like a full production, though.
It did. I wanted more. I like wanted to see like the disparity between the servants, the haves and the have-nots. Mm. You know, I wanted to see even more. I just want to go back to the Grand Hotel. I want to go back again, Rob. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if it does make an appearance again.
I hope so. I was rocked by the fact that I felt things. it wasn't just like, oh, I love these toe-tapping songs and this is great. I felt the lives that were changed. And it's a stylized show. You can't just, like, these are stock characters in many ways. And yet, if you breathe humanity into them, there are these life isn't easy and you have to make choices. And the redemption of the Baron, there's an allegorical, Baron dies when he becomes a good man.
Spoiler alert.
Sorry.
No, it's fine.
I didn't know. And then I was like, oh gosh, this is Otto lives when he, it's a beautiful piece about life. I don't know. It really struck me and I was really moved by it.
We don't really see it a lot. So Encores is doing it now or just did it. And Reprise Theater Company in L.A., which is sort of the L.A. equivalent of Encores, which was shut down for a number of years and now is open again for business, is doing it as well. So if you're in L.A., you'll have a chance to see it.
Is it the same, is it like a sister thing? Or is it like Josh Rhodes' company going over? I mean, is it?
No. It's a totally different, yeah.
Wouldn't that be cool if they like?
Yeah, I'm a little nervous about the one in L.A. for reasons I will keep to myself, but that's okay. The Donmar did it a few years ago.
I'm glad, because for a show that ran for 2 years on Broadway, I have to say, I'm surprised we've never seen in New York a production of it.
NYU, I think, did a production of it once. I feel like a community theater out here did it once. It's a rare beast.
It is.
But a good one.
Yeah. I just thought you would see it more.
I'm surprised. I thought you would mention, my favorite thing about Grand Hotel, which is that commercial with the old woman.
Are you kidding me?
Which is the best commercial in theater history.
Will you please talk about that? Because we actually recorded our own version of it afterwards.
We did. So anyway, Grand Hotel was had been running, like Kevin said, for about a year or so. And they did a little star casting. And in the role of the fading ballerina was
Sid Charisse,
one of the greatest MGM dancers of all time.
Yes.
And this was very popular in the 80s, the idea, and in the 70s as well, which would be interviewing audience members as they left a theater to say how much they enjoyed a production, which is where the funny line, no one knows where it comes from, is, you know, I loved it better than Cats. Nobody knows where that comes from, but that's sort of the idea. And this camera... The
camera is like so into the lady's face. The light is so bright on her face.
It's this older woman
it's
wearing...
It's like pointed up, I want to say. Pointed
it's up
like
almost.
A selfie where you have to take it above.
Yeah.
It's definitely pointed up at her. Do you know what I mean?
No. She's wearing this big eggplant purple parka.
We have to post it.
This huge glasses, and she's...
Yes. She's like Linda Richman. She's like Linda Richman.
And I can't, I don't know verbatim, but she goes, I loved it. Sid Charisse is fabulous. The dancing, the singing, the acting, all of it. And the guy who's interviewing her says sarcastically, so you didn't like it? She goes, I loved it. And he goes, are you gonna see it again? She goes, I'm gonna see it again. And he goes, when? She goes, I don't know. My husband will get tickets. He works in the area.
Right, like
my husband.
That's right. It's like details all of a sudden. Like, what are you talking about?
But that's one of the things I love about New York.
The Olive Garden. We're gonna come. It's gonna be great.
It's that's what I love about this city is you get somebody's like just opens up.
It's like a public access. Yeah, channel.
I loved it. My husband works in the area. And so this is, I mean, it's an in-joke in the industry, which is, you know, you could just simply say my husband works in the area and everybody knows what you're talking about. Gosh. So I don't know who she was or whatever happened to her. Hopefully she actually went on for Sid Charisse at one point.
Yeah.
And my other thing about Grand Hotel, which I love, is I think it is, and we've talked to other couple of people who have said this as well, it was the best Tony Awards performance, I think, in the history
Michael
of the
Jeter,
Tony Awards.
How can I not talk about Michael Jeter at the same time? I mean, like, this is he won the Tony Award for this, and his speech is, I think, one of the greatest Tony Award speeches ever given, ever. And the Will Drink a Glass. Oh my God,
it's first of all stunning. A guy who's clearly not a dancer, but dances like no one's watching.
Stop the show.
Just stop the show.
The final chorus, it stops the show, and he does his little thing back and forth on the ballet.
His exuberance, his enthusiasm, and you're right, that Tony speech is really sweet because it talks a lot about addiction and how he overcame addiction. And an actor who had great things ahead of him, but he died very young. He died maybe six or seven, about 10, 15 years later after Grand Hotel.
That's sad.
He was epileptic. He had a seizure and passed away of a seizure. Yeah. If you want to see more of Michael Jeter, there's a fabulous TV version of that play, The Boys Next Door, about the developmentally delayed adults who live in a group home.
Oh.
It's him, Nathan Lane, Courtney B. Vance, and Robert Sean Leonard are the four that live in the home.
Talk about good actors.
The acting on this is just so freaking incredible. It's ridiculous. But it's Michael Jeter, especially. A really brilliant performer that we lost way too young.
Yeah.
Also, Jane Krakowski. Gave Jane Krakowski
a nice big
spotlight.
Yeah, she.
Lillian Montevecchi, Akers, Karen Akers, who does concerts still. Lillian Montevecchi still does concerts.
Bless
them all because they are.
Yeah, No, it's a sensational cast, and as was the one that we saw. I mean, it was Helen York was
Helen York, Brandon Uranowitz, John Dawson,
who I didn't even recognize.
No, he was good.
Yeah,
he was really good. But I, you know,
especially you had to sing that song.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that Raven song? You mean the crooked path?
That's a skip song.
That's a skip song.
That's a hashtag.
Because it also comes out of nowhere. Yeah. You're just like, what? Like, what's he singing?
He did a great job, but...
He makes one mention earlier on about a crow or a raven, and then, like, well, I'm supposed to remember it. Now you got to beat me over the head. I'm not the brightest bulb.
Aw.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Speaking of bright bulbs.
Oh.
My favorite thing actually ties in perfectly with your favorite thing.
Oh, does it?
I'd like to read something to you, if I may.
Yes, please.
I have to open my book, so vamp for a second.
Okay, vamp. Vamp. I'm excited. I have no idea what this is going to be.
This is a book.
Okay. He's got the book here, everybody.
I'd like to read the first paragraph.
Okay.
I never had a grandfather. One was crushed in a coal mine collapse when Mom was 4, and the other, after another hopeless day on the farm, killed all his hired hands, shot Grandma, and then himself. She lived. He died. So I was left with 2 grandmothers. One was a witch, and one was a bitch. I loved the witch.
What is that?
This is the opening paragraph of Tommy Toon's autobiography called Footnotes.
Are you kidding me?
Which is my favorite thing this week.
It's called, that's how it starts?
Yes.
I thought it was like, I really honestly thought it was like a Charlie Adams or like a Adams Family type thing. Or was that
it's the Charles Adams. Yeah, it's the first paragraph of Tommy Toon's autobiography, which is called Footnotes, which was published in 1997. One of the cool things about the book, if you'll notice, is it's tall and thin. Like Tommy Toon, we'll post a picture of this, but it's brilliant marketing on their end. But after Grand Hotel, I wanted to learn more about it, and I was like, where can I find some more information? And then I remembered I bought this for $6 at a bargain bin somewhere, and I don't even think people even remember that Tommy Toon wrote an autobiography.
Best thing about being obsessed with a niche art form is that you can always get the books at the bargain bin. I'm serious. Like, the cask albums are always cheap.
I don't disagree with you, sir. That's
like the best thing that we love a niche art form.
It's very true. One of the things that's really interesting about Footnotes is it's much like Tommy Toon's work, nonlinear, thematic, and marches to the beat of its own drummer.
Kind of like our podcast.
Kind of like our podcast. Sure. The book is, when you read the book, there's mentions of a couple of the shows that he worked on,
yeah,
but they don't really go in depth.
There's like no deep stories about like when we were in the ballroom for, you know.
No, I mean Grand Hotel, I think, takes up 3 pages.
Oh,
And
John Kenley.
A couple of things about John Kenley. That's what the cool thing about the 9, I think, takes up like 2 pages.
So what's it about?
It's about his views on life. It's about the experiences that he's had, his life's philosophy. But you're not really going to get a lot of new show information about it. I mean, if you're voracious, like, oh my God, I want to know about Grand Hotel. He tells us exactly what you just said, which is that it was tumultuous and they brought in Maury Yeston, da-da-da-da-da. Will Rogers Follies, all he says is that Adolph Green came up with a better title and they should have used that instead of Will Rogers Follies. The title that Adolph Green suggested was called Willamania, which I actually think is a better title. Mm. You don't like it.
It's okay.
Tommy Toon didn't like it.
I don't like it either.
He talks interestingly enough about Nine, which is that originally the musical was supposed to be very similar to the film 8½. And from in the film 8½, there's women and there is men. Mm. And he couldn't find a character. He had auditions that day for somebody to play the producer, which was a gentleman in the musical called Otto, which is going to be a guy. And Lillian Montevecchi walked in for another audition, and he goes, "Oh my God, she's amazing, but where can we put her? Why don't I make her the producer? And why don't they just all be women?" So he credits Lillian Montevecchi for inspiring him to do the all-female Nine, which nobody wanted to do. Everyone was like, "This is really weird."
The Nine?
Yeah, like the whole creative team was like, "No. Like, no, it is supposed to, no, this is weird. It should be women and men, just like in the movie." Wow. So everyone was like, And then finally they were like, "Fine, for the workshop, we will try it." And then, of course, it's the brilliance of Nine. But also, you get some really great things like, I want to read to you, because, you know, he couldn't spend a lot of time on Nine, and he couldn't spend a lot of time on Will Rogers' Follies, because he used to have these things in here. Hold on one second.
Another reading by Rob Schneider.
Andy Warhol and I used to do cum facials, using our own, of course, not Liar. Each other's. He had heard Mae West used to do it, too. Of course, she couldn't use her own. She used what the muscle men in her club act produced for her. I wonder if it works better for somebody else's. I've always been a big fan of breasts, maybe because I was bottle fed. Maybe I feel cheated, and that accounts for my obsession with tits. At some point, my taste broadened to include pecs, too, but not too many men like their pecs romanced, or at least I haven't found many. There have been some notable exceptions, though, and the hours I've spent breastfeeding in my adulthood on both sexes have been quite pleasurable. On men, they're called dunes. On women, they're called pillows. Either way, they make people from my planet go yum yum and send us into ecstasy.
I'm picking my jaw up off the floor, apologizing to my mom. Oh, my gosh.
So I'm so sorry, but...
Wait, he really goes there.
Oh, and lots of stuff about...
He goes there.
And lots of stuff about Twiggy.
Well, because they were together.
Oh, yeah.
They
and he talks a lot about Busker Alley and breaking his foot. And,
yeah.
And it's really sad when you think about it. After Will Rogers' Follies, there was supposed to be, if we remember, Busker Alley, which was supposed to be his... Remember, yeah. There was the marquee was even up on the St.
Yeah.
James. They painted everything, like, yellow.
Yeah.
Never happened. He broke his foot, and that's like the last thing he did.
Right, because he was at a great track record for a while there. You know, Grand Hotel, and because I'm trying to in my mind, I know he did that Dr. Dolittle tour, but Bye Bye Birdie, and then you know with Anne Ryan King.
But that's about
like I'm like, what has he done? I mean, like,
but when you look at, I mean, look at his work though. Look at the club.
Yeah.
Look at Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. Look at Nine. Look at a Grand Hotel. The visual. Staging in those things, the way he, like you said, in Grand Hotel, the fact that he creates all these overlapping montages, it's very much like the film director Robert Altman.
Mm.
It's brilliant.
Yes.
It's absolutely brilliant. So I'm hoping that he'll come back at some point and give us something as visually stunning as what he's done in the past.
I just want to see more of his mark. I want to see
I'll
more
take
of
anything.
His voice.
Even if it's just him in a show, like even if he's not directing or choreographing it, he should be the wizard. In Wicked.
Oh,
I know he's
God.
Very tall. He's not at all what the wizard usually looks like, but that would be, I think
that'd
he'd be
crazy.
Wouldn't he be great?
Oh my God.
Or maybe he could be the nice old man from Waitress.
Don't take that away from Lewis Stadlin.
It's Lee Wilcoff. Lee Wilcoff.
Oh, Lee Wilcoff.
Lewis is in line. Lewis is
Why
waiting.
Why would I say Lewis Stadlin? There's no way Lewis Stadlin would do that.
That'd be a very angry.
Please come.
He literally just throws the pie on the floor.
Oh God. You're right, though. We deserve to see more. And I'm fascinated by that book now, and I want to read it. Because I like when people... Because sometimes you know that when people are writing their biography, they're kind of rewriting their history in a way.
Yeah.
So that it'll be the way they want us to see it. And of course, there's that in this book. But I know that he's going to be brutally honest about things, it sounds like.
I mean, the book is absolutely fantastic. Once again, it's called Footnotes. It was published by Simon & Schuster in 1997. It's a very... quick read. You can literally read it in a couple of hours. And it's fabulous. And lots of pictures.
Oh, yeah.
And lots of great stories
of
about him, like
too.
I said, with Carol Channing and Mike Nichols and Charles Honey Coles. It's really a fantastic book. And
my first Broadway job, dancing in the chorus of a musical adventure of Sherlock Holmes called Baker Street. See? This is cool. My dressing roommate was Christopher Walken, who had gone on to huge success in Hollywood. People forget he was a terrific dancer first. Root talent. Yeah, you're right. Even in that, he's talking about just... yeah, that's, wow. Sorry, I didn't. I just totally interrupted you. Did you?
No. It's a really fantastic book. I'm sure you can get it cheap on Amazon. So
my
favorite thing this week is returning us to the roots of Tommy Tune in Footnotes, Simon & Schuster, 1997.
And we didn't even plan it this way, but mine is Tommy Tune's great musical, Grand Hotel. You should listen to it and look for it if you can ever see a production of it.
People come. People go. People move chairs.
Give me my morphine.
But more about the lobby of the Hotel Carter when we get back. Quick little story, and then we'll head off the air. The Hotel Carter, which I frequently mention, is an actual hotel in New York City.
Yeah.
It is the worst rated hotel in New York City. And when I graduated from a college, my parents treated me to a trip to New York. And that's the hotel they got me.
Fun fact, when I first moved to New York, my aunt and uncle from Alaska were coming to New York, and they said, Kevin, will you help us get a hotel? We don't want to spend a lot of money. And I said, okay, well, I can find something. So I looked up. It was the early days of the internet, and I just found this hotel because it was right in Times Square.
Yep.
Didn't matter that the E of Carter and the, you know, on top of the hotel was out for the last 10 years. Didn't matter. I thought, okay, this is a hotel. And they didn't even spend the night. They lasted like 20 minutes in the room, and they left and went to another hotel down the street, Hampton Inn or something like that, because it was, I think it's from the old like CD days. I think it goes back to like I don't, is it still open? But the entrance is on 43rd, which is kind of like the backdoor street. Nothing exists on 43rd, and it to me it's a throwback to the days when you did not want to walk down 42nd Street.
And there used to be a theater in the Hotel Carter.
Are you serious?
Yeah, there used to be like an off-Broadway black box that was in the basement of the Hotel Carter.
Gosh.
And now it's, but it's the one thing that you know how,
Eagle too. It's where you,
do you know how Airbnb says, you're not allowed to rent in New York. You can't do Airbnbs in New York. Yeah. Airbnb always uses Hotel Carter as their defense, saying, if people aren't allowed to do Airbnb, they're going to have to stay at the Hotel Carter. I'm not joking. That's what they use as their defense.
I can't believe it's still going.
Yeah, because they say that then you're turning tourists and families over to
that
because it's so cheap. And it's what you did. It was cheap and it was in Times Square. So, all right.
So, well, see you at the Hotel Carter, everybody. Bye.
But not at the Grand Hotel.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. Brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. These are a few of my favorite things.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not gonna wanna miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.